Welcome, everyone. Today we are very happy to have Dr. David Rosmarin, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and a board-certified clinical psychologist. He also directs the Center for Anxiety, which has offices in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Rockland County, and Boston. Dr. Rosmarin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. So today, we are going to do an introductory session to a new teleconference series on reducing stress, worry, and depression, a Jewish approach to emotional wellness. And this is an introduction, again, to a 16-part lecture series, really more of a workshop than a lecture, frankly, because there are participatory aspects of it, as I'll talk about a bit today, which we are hoping to launch in a few months' time. And this introductory session is important because anybody who wants to participate in that 16-session program, we want them to know what they're getting into. And we want them to understand what the framework is of that program and have a preview of coming attractions. So without further ado, what I'd like to do today is to introduce the program, to provide some general information about the background of it. So again, so prospective participants can learn about it and to determine whether or not it's something that they wish to enroll in. I want to provide a brief history of this program, including a couple of results from some research that we conducted. I want to also describe the spiritual Jewish paradigm that is the theoretical foundation for the program. I'm going to tell you about how I came to that and what it is. And then to describe the structure of the workshop, the format of it, a couple of examples. And then if people have questions and comments, then I'd be happy to take those at the end. So hope that sounds like a good plan. Okay, so I'll provide you with some context first. Approximately 15 years ago, I was fascinated with the question of why do human beings struggle with mental health concerns? And just to make my question clear, by historical standards, modern Western culture is extremely advanced, very sophisticated, and we're also very wealthy. We're in an unprecedented age. We have mobile and wireless communications literally at our fingertips. The world is at our fingertips. Many people, in fact, most people, have global positioning satellite, GPS navigation, also at our fingertips. Medical technologies, marvels of modern medicine are really incredible. I don't know if you saw it last summer. There was literally at the Harvard Medical School, there was a team of surgeons that did a double arm transplant. They transplanted two arms onto a human being. Amazing, right? And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have world travel. You can pick up and be literally halfway around the world in less than a day. And there are other blessings that previous generations would never have even dreamed of. Indoor plumbing, electricity. It's incredible. Living in the modern world is incredible. And considering all those amazing advancements, one would think that the quality of life would be, well, better. So it's pretty odd to me, and it was odd to me 15 years ago when I started asking myself this question, why is it that the lifetime prevalence for a full-blown mental disorder in the United States of America today is 46.4%? That's according to the National Institute on Mental Health. That means nearly half of people experience a mental disorder at some point during their lifetimes. And during any 12-month period, it's more than 25%, 26.2% to be exact. That's more than 80 million people in every year. For anxiety disorders alone, it's 18.1% of the population every year. And it's not just about defining mental illness better and mental distress. There is objective data here. 38,000 people in 2012 took their own lives through suicide. Suicide today is the 10th leading cause of death. The 10th leading cause of death. And that doesn't include the opiate crisis. And I'm not even going to get into that because the statistics are so sobering and upsetting that I wouldn't be able to speak about anything else. But I will tell you that the problem is getting worse over time. People who are aged 20 to 40 are much more severely affected by mental health problems than their parents and than their grandparents. They're much more likely to have issues. There's been a lot of research lately and a lot of press, actually, on depression among teens and anxiety among teens. If you look at the VA system, the Veterans Affairs system in the United States, 45% of service personnel, not just people in facing combat, these days apply for disability. In World War II, it was 11%. And Vietnam, which was horrific, a horrifically violent war, was 16%. And today it's 45%. And if you look more broadly, individuals aged 18 to 29 are more than twice as likely to have an anxiety disorder and nearly four times as likely to have a mood disorder as individuals who are 60 plus. In other words, despite all the amazing blessing that we have, the opulence that we have, the conveniences, the incredible technology, and the amazing world in which we live, which is smaller and faster and better than ever, the state of mental health in the Western world today is on a spectrum. And on the one side of the spectrum, you could call it pitiful. And on the other side of the spectrum, you could call it dangerous. And that is the spectrum. That is where we lie, somewhere between pitiful and dangerous. So it nagged me for so many years. Why on earth are Americans, who are the most privileged people ever to walk planet Earth, why are we in such a decrepit and a wretched state when it comes to our mental health? And I searched. I searched the globe for that, for an answer to that question. And in about 2009, I found a potential answer. Like so many good things in life, it was in not the last place I expected, but one of the last ones. I found it in the world of ancient Jewish spiritual wisdom, which is also known as Torah. Now, I'm an observant Jewish individual, and I knew at the time, and I was at the time, just to be clear, and I knew at the time that Torah life has a lot to offer. I know there's a sense of family, community, the Sabbath, but I stumbled upon something back in 2009 that was, it radically changed my personal relationship with Torah, but it also changed my professional, more profoundly, it changed my professional relationship with Torah. Because what I came across, what was taught to me by my rabbi and teacher, Rabbi Leib Kellerman of Jerusalem, what he taught me was a paradigm, a theory, if you will, but it's more than a theory because it's applied, a paradigm called connections, the connections paradigm. The way he taught it to me was, the title was The Worlds of Connection and Disconnection. And this teaching, which he taught to me, Rabbi Kellerman told me, came from his teacher, Rabbi Shlomo Volbe. And apparently he learned it from his teacher, Rav Yeruchim Lubavitz, who learned it from his teacher, the Altar of Kelim, or Simcha Zissel Ziv, who learned it from his teachers, going back to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and probably going back to all the way to Moses, to Moshe Rabbeinu. In any event, this paradigm changed my professional perspectives on mental health because I observed a couple of really novel features of this approach regarding the worlds of connection and disconnection. Firstly, this is an authentic Jewish religious approach. It's an unadulterated Torah approach to mental health. It's not a pop psychology approach which has Torah themes laid onto it. It didn't come from a secular body or a secularized approach which then had Torah concepts invoked onto it in order to make it consistent or to look at areas of overlap. This is an approach that came from the Torah system, from individuals who... I'm not even sure had much of a secular education at all, in fact. But more important to me is that it explained an answer to my question, why? Why do people in the modern age experience such horrific mental distress? What, and also, more importantly, it answered questions like, what makes people thrive? How can we thrive emotionally and spiritually and live a more purposeful, spiritual, and meaningful life? What are the tricks and the tools to enhancing our relationships, to figuring out our potential and to achieving it, to overcoming obstacles in our way, and alongside all of that, to having less stress and less worry and less depression in our lives? But most of all, and I've already alluded to this, it was a practical framework. This is not just a theory. It's a practical framework for treating and for preventing mental health concerns like stress and worry and depression, like I mentioned, and also for living an enlightened and a happy existence. It's a practical framework for how to thrive. So when I was first exposed to this, I approached Rabbi Kellerman, and I said, you know, I've been studying clinical psychology for a while, and I've never come across anything like this. And I think this could be a really great workshop. In fact, I think it could be a treatment program, and I'd like to use it with people who have clinical disorders. And I'd like to do some research on that. Would you be amenable to helping me? And thank God, he agreed. And he taught me a lot about this program and this paradigm. In fact, he co-authored it with me, and I'm giving him credit, even though he probably won't take it, that on a monthly basis we met for a couple of hours for a period of a few years, I think it was, and drew up the I took copious notes on what he taught me, and organized it, and then once I had organized it, went over it with him and reviewed it, and we came up with a workshop, a 16-part workshop called the Connections Program. And that is the result of these efforts over a period of, well, it was 2 years of working with him and then 3 or 4 years of refining it and implementing it. So in terms of using it in a clinical setting, and I understand that the program being done here, is that okay? The program being done here is not a clinical program. This is an approach to emotional wellness. But what we did is we used this in my New York offices, the Center for Anxiety. You can check that out, centerforanxiety.org, to learn more about those offices, which offer clinical services. And we used the program, or a variant of it anyway, in a couple of open clinical trials. We recruited patients with generalized anxiety disorder, and that's a chronic mental health condition involving lots of worry and physiological symptoms of anxiety, like muscle tension and restlessness and irritability, occurring for about 6 months or more. And we provided the Connections program to them and took them through the 16 session program. The all those individuals were adults. They were all 18 plus. None of them had more, they only had GAD. They didn't have other disorders. They didn't have severe disorders. And all of them wanted to participate in the spiritual program. And we did our first one was in December 2012, and then we did another one in October 2013. We did some more work in April 2014, the following year. And all in all, over 100 individuals participated in these programs. And what we found was individuals presenting with these disorders responded really well. Across both trials, we had statistically significant decreases in worry and also in stress. And also people were less impaired by their symptoms. People also had spiritual benefits. They had a more trusting relationship with God. They had less mistrust. They were involved more in religious coping. And then we also looked at their effect sizes, just because sometimes things are statistically significant but not clinically relevant. But what we found was that people's levels of worry and stress and impairment, they decreased by about between half and a full standard deviation. In fact, some of the some of the data was even better, 1.2 standard deviations in one of the trials, which is very significant, clinically relevant, that is. And a lot of people had really great things to say, just in general about it. Just to quote one person, there are no words to thank you for your efforts and expertise. We are so proud of, this is a parent speaking, we're so proud of our daughter and how this, the Connections program is with her every day, the way that she speaks to herself, the way that she listens to what she's feeling, and she has a foundation of confidence that's at her core. That's just one example. I shared some others with David Greenberg, and he can share those with you as well. But in sum, this body of work is very exciting to me because today what we're launching here is not just a clinical intervention, but something for everyone. Everybody today can benefit from more emotional wellness. Not everybody needs a clinical intervention, but everybody could use some strategies to improve emotional wellness and to thrive better, and the Connections program provides that. So, I think what we will do now is I'll give you an overview of the Connections paradigm. The Connections paradigm is the theoretical, if you will, framework behind the Connections program. And here's a summary of the paradigm. I'll try to summarize a few. There are five main points. Point number one, at any moment in time, human beings are dwelling or living in one of two worlds. We're either in the world of connection or the world of disconnection. And those are binary. There isn't anything else. We're either connected or we're disconnected at all points in time. And people make choices to either live a connected life or a choice to not live a connected life. Sometimes people will live in one by default because that's what they're used to doing or because that's what they're trained to do or because that's something that they saw their parents doing and that's something that they've become accustomed to over time or for whatever spiritual or other reasons, that's what they do. But people do make a choice to either live in a connected world or a disconnected world. And it's up to us what we do. And that's the first point of the paradigm. The second point is that connection involves a coming together of two opposite and separate entities. Because there's two pieces or two parts, and those come together to connect. That occurs in three central areas or domains. First, there's a body and soul. And the body and soul, as we'll discuss in part one of the series, which is sessions 1 through 5, the body and soul are two separate entities, and they are very different from each other. And people can have connection, or inner connection, as we'll call it, where the body and soul come together as one, where the body thinks about the soul, and the soul thinks about the body. And having that inner connection is a foundation, the first domain, in which people can live in the world of connection. The second domain of connection is between us and other people, interpersonal connection. When we get outside of ourselves and think about other people, and when we tolerate them, when we are putting ourselves in their shoes and put relationships above our own preferences, when we make relationships the priority, that is a choice to live in the world of connection. That's the second domain. And the third domain, as you might have guessed, is spiritual connection, where we get outside of ourselves and connect with the Almighty, connect with God. Those are the three domains of connection. By contrast, the world of disconnection involves a separation or an estrangement from these entities, when body and soul are not getting along, when we don't think and care about other people, and when we are disconnected from God, whatever that means. And we'll talk about the structure of the program soon. So that's the second point. The first point of the paradigm, first main point of the paradigm is that connection involves, at any moment in time, we're either in the world of connection or disconnection. And the second point is that connection involves coming together of opposite entities, and that occurs in either A, B, or C, interconnection, interpersonal connection, and spiritual connection. Point number three. In each of the three domains of connection, this is the hardest point to understand. In each of the three domains of connection, there's what we call a giver and a receiver. Connection occurs when opposite entities connect. And the nature of those opposites is that one of the entities is providing for the other's needs, and that other entity in turn receives its gifts. I'll just give you an example from the world of interconnection, the first world. The body can receive from the soul. The soul can bestow gifts of food and, frankly, of spirituality upon the body, and the body can choose to receive those or not. The soul can also choose not to provide, and the body can either turn towards it and try to provide indications to the soul that it wants to receive, or it can go into its own world. A thriving inner world occurs where the body has its needs, emotional, physical, and spiritual, and opens up to the soul, and the soul provides for those and validates them and takes care of itself. There's a lot more to discuss about this. And in the actual program, you'll see if you participate that it's not only a theoretical idea. Again, it's something that's practical. There are exercises that correspond to everything that we're speaking about. But I'm just trying to give you a bit of an idea of what it means that there is a giver and there is a receiver. Interpersonally as well, when we have a relationship with other people, there's a giver and a receiver. Now, sometimes those change over time. Sometimes I'm giving to somebody and sometimes I'm receiving from them. But at any moment in time, I'm either one or the other. My relationship's not. My relationship with another person is either in the giving mode or the receiving mode. And being sensitive to that is the key to having thriving interpersonal relationships with other people. Spiritual connection is another area. But the bottom line is that this concept of giving and receiving is described in depth in the workshop, and with concrete examples for facilitating both giving and receiving in all three areas of connection. And that's point number three. Point number four. The three areas of connection, interconnection, interpersonal connection, and spiritual connection, they are hierarchical. And what that means is that there's a foundation, and then there's a middle row, and then there's a top part to it. The foundation is one's interconnection. Our relationship with ourself is the most fundamental of the three areas of connection. And if we have that in place, or better put, to the extent that we have that in place, we can have a connection with other people. And to the extent that we have a relationship with ourselves and with others, we can have a connection with God. We can have a relationship with God. But somebody's relationship with God is constrained or limited by the degree to which we have a relationship with us, within ourselves, that is, interconnection, and with other people. And our relationship with others is constrained by the degree to which we have interconnection with ourselves. I'll just give you a simple example of this. It's very hard to have relationships with other people when our individual emotional life is in turmoil or under stress. When somebody doesn't know how to take care of their own needs, it's very hard to take care of the needs of another person. And furthermore, if we're mistreating others, if we're not connected to them, well, that's not compatible with having a close relationship with God. Because if we can't relate to something physical, how could we relate to something that's immaterial? That's something that's metaphysical. Now, of course, in certain cases, somebody can work on building a relationship with another person and then fill in the gaps in the foundation. But there's a risk, and they have to go back and fill in the gaps, because if they don't, then, well, the building can come down, another person's involved, and it can get complicated, and they end up in my office as a patient, frankly. But beyond that, the goal here is to be aware that these areas are hierarchical and that one is a foundation to the next. In the long run, certainly, the only way to sustain connection at higher levels with God and with others is to have firm base at lower levels. The fifth point to the connections paradigm, and this is the last one, is that one only has problems in terms of mental health concerns. Those mental health concerns that we were speaking about before, whether it's stress or worry, depression, sadness, or worse, those can only occur when a person dwells in the world of disconnection. When people are in the world of connection, there's no such thing as anxiety. There's no such thing as worry or stress or depression. If we have healthy, thriving relationships between body and soul with other human beings and with God, that is the protection against psychological distress. But when we go into a state of disconnection, we're susceptible to anxiety and we're susceptible to other concerns as well. In fact, in many of the writings that I was introduced to when I was going through these sources with Rabbi Kellerman, I noticed that the worlds of connection and disconnection are also called the worlds of love and fear. In other words, the world of connection is a world of love, and the world of disconnection is a world of fear. It's very interesting, by the way, parenthetically, that the opposite of fear is not calm, according to the connections paradigm. The opposite of fear is love. And that's what the connections program is about. Can people learn to fall in love and to stay in love? That is what it's about. Now, given the curricular nature of, this workshop, there's a structure to it. And I mentioned this briefly before, but I'll just spell it out now. There are 16 sessions in the program. Sessions 1 to 5, which will be starting in April, they focus on interconnection. That's connection between body and soul. So we have 5 sessions focused on defining body-soul connection and ways to enhance giving and receiving in our inner world. Then we have sessions 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, another 5 sessions which are devoted to interpersonal connection, enhancing our relationships with other people, creating thriving ways to give and receive to other people, learning how to engage with people who aren't connected, learning how to try to make those relationships as strong as we can, and to forge new ones. And finally, the pinnacle, sessions 11 through 15, another 5 sessions, focusing on spiritual connection, on developing a relationship with God in a very profound and real way. And that is not an ethereal, in case you were wondering or thinking, that is not an ethereal part of the workshop. That is very practical, and in fact, in some ways, even more practical than the first module on body-soul connection, on interconnection. And then there's a final session which will summarize the program and discuss some other special topics if we have time. Now, the goal of the program, just to now round out what's the actual program about, the goal of it is to help individuals to develop concrete skills and to facilitate and to maintain a connection in all 3 domains: interconnection, interpersonal connection with others, and spiritual connection with God. And like I mentioned, the structure maps onto it. 3 modules. There's sessions 1 through 5, module 1, sessions 6 through 11, module 2, 10 rather, module 2, and sessions 11 through 15, module 3, with a final session. Now, in each module, the way it works is that there's an introductory session to provide an overview of interconnection, and then an overview of interpersonal connection, and an overview of spiritual connection. And then the remaining 4 sessions, those focus on specific strategies to build connection. So sessions 1, and then 6, and then 11 are an overview session. Even those have a practical corollary component to them, which I think you'll find to be engaging as well as interesting. But each one of those is more, I guess, more of an overview or more theoretical, if you will. And then the following 4 sessions in each of the 3 modules are focused on specific areas of connection to be able to build. The workshop is going to work in approximately 60 minute. We'll call them sessions. Last time we did it, actually a couple times that we've done it, we routinely ran out of time. It's definitely a jam-packed hour, but there is, because there's a lot of material to cover. But in between sessions, is really where the magic, if you will, happens. Because the goal of this workshop is not only to expose participants to these ideas. It's not only to provide an overview and a theoretical overview. It's to be able to provide daily engagement and experience with exercises between sessions. And to that extent, there are exercises which are assigned And those map carefully onto the concepts that are reviewed in each session. So really, the people who get the most out of the Connections program are the people who put the most into it. If people come and they participate and they listen, then they'll get something out of it. But if they do the work on a day-to-day basis, that's really, like I said, where the magic happens. There's another aspect of it, which is charting. Participants are going to be encouraged to keep a daily chart. David is going to send out materials about that, about what's the chart look like, and how it can be used. But basically, on a day-to-day basis, people are going to be charting their use, excuse me, of some of the activities. Not all 15 of them, of course, because by the end it gets quite a bit. But at least 3 or 4 at a time, people are going to be charting. And after 3 or 4 weeks of practice, the idea is that people will be practicing them and doing them without needing to chart them on their own. Okay, so I guess I have a couple of concluding remarks. And then if there are any comments or questions, I'll be happy to try to attend to them. So here we are embarking on a journey of living in the world of connection. And it is a journey because it's a lifelong project, in fact. This program, this workshop, is about learning what the tools are and about initiating the process of starting to utilize those strategies, those tools, to create greater connection in the three domains. Almost invariably, people who go through this program will do really well in 80% of the exercises. And their exercises, those could be exercises that they've never done before. They could be exercises that they'd spontaneously done before, but not systematically. But that's a lot of good happens by people just systematically going through and shoring up what they're already doing well at. About 15 to 20% of the exercises, though, are challenging, and they really are a lifelong journey and challenge. I myself, there are at least 2 exercises that I struggle with, at least on a weekly basis, if not on a daily basis, and sometimes. And the goal of this program is to introduce you to those strategies and thereby potentially change your life. Our goal is to achieve greater purposeful, spiritual, and meaningful existence, and to have closer relationships, and in the process have less stress, worry, and depression. But really, the ultimate goal is to have a more connected and meaningful life. There's another point which I'm going to make in conclusion, which is that a lot of the ideas, there are concepts in this program that are in some ways the exact opposite of some of the concepts in the Western world. In fact, I would say that the reason why we are having such a mental health crisis today is because some of the ideas and some of the concepts and practices are so foreign, culturally foreign. So I ask that people who participate, anybody who's coming from a Western background, and I imagine that's almost everybody who's on the line, keep an open mind, and during the 16-week course, put yourself into it, allow yourself to participate in it fully. And after that period, if it's not working, then that's something for you to decide whether you want to continue. But I do ask people to suspend judgment and to think about, I'll just give you one example of this. In the Western world, one of the things we value the most is productivity, to be productive. And in many ways, that is the opposite of connection. Not exactly, but productivity and connection are often mutually exclusive because one has to give up on one in order to maintain the other and to attain the other. So for this reason, people might feel that they're sacrificing something in order to participate in the program. But I encourage you to do so because, well, given the risks of living in the modern day, it's worth it. But also, nothing in life that's important comes without a little bit of sweat. So with that, I will conclude, and thank you very much for being on the line.
Okay, if there are any questions, you can press star 6 and the number 1. And while we wait to see if there are any questions, I was wondering if you can clarify, you mentioned that the opposite of fear is not calm, it's love. Are you going to be speaking about that, or can you clarify that now?
Yeah, it's a great question. The entire program, in some ways, answers that question. Why is the opposite of fear love and not calm? But just to expound on it a little bit, I'll tell you a story. I remember being a graduate student many years ago, and there was an individual who came in, and she was feeling pretty anxious. She was seeing one of my colleagues, and the way our clinic was set up, the graduate school clinic, there was a video, and you could look in and actually see my colleague's sessions. And we were watching these sessions unfold week to week as my colleague was trying to help this young woman who had anxiety and had a longstanding pattern of anxiety. And she wasn't the most cooperative patient. Then my colleague would provide her with homework, and she didn't really participate. And sessions were going not that well, frankly. And one day, the patient came in and started the session. And she has a big smile ear to ear. And she looks like she's cured. She's happy. Everything's going great. She's connected, and everything's wonderful, spiritual, meaningful, perfect. I mean, it couldn't be better. And my colleague says to her, "So, it looks like things are going well. Have you been doing the homework?" And she says, "No, not at all." And my colleague turns a little bit green, not quite, and says, "What's been going on? Like, what do you attribute the change in your mood?" And she says, "Here, take a look," and puts out her finger, and there's a big rock on the end. Turned out that she got engaged. And at that point, my supervisor at the time turned to us and he said, "Oh, that's the end of therapy for this one." And we said, "Why? Why?" It was Dr. Rob Carroll's at Bowling Green State. And he said, "Because you can't treat a patient who's in love. There's no such thing as doing psychotherapy with someone who's in love because they don't need it." And that's the short answer to your question.
Okay, thank you very much. So there are no other questions. For those of you still on the call, if you'd like to be notified of the upcoming dates, you can just reply back to the email I sent, but there will be further emails sent out as well, so you don't have to do that. And if you have any questions that you want to write in, you can also just reply back to that same email and write them in, and we will address them in the future calls. And that is it. Dr. Rosman, thank you so much, and we look forward to the next class in the workshop.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye.